It's my pleasure and honor to introduce Laura Hanos-Webb, PhD, clinical psychologist. Laura has been a former assistant professor at Santa Clara University, the former postdoctoral research fellow at the University of California in San Francisco, and the author of The Gift of ADHD, How to Transform Your Child's Problems into Strengths. Dr. Hanos-Webb is a worldwide ADD expert and offers ADD coaching. Dr. Hanos-Webb is a clinical psychologist and author, as I just said, The Gift of ADHD, The Gift of ADHD Activity Book, The Gift of Adult ADD, and the ADHD Workbook for Teens. And one that I've read and really got a lot out of, Listening to Depression, How Understanding Your Pain Can Heal Your Life. That's a good one. Her work has been featured in Newsweek, The Wall Street Journal, Prevention Magazine, The Chicago Tribune, and Publishers Weekly, as well as newspapers across the country and local and national radio and television. Dr. Hanos-Webb completed a 2-year postdoctoral research fellowship at the University of California in San Francisco and has been an assistant professor teaching graduate students. She's published more than 25 scholarly articles. And currently, she is, and most importantly, she is also the mother of 2 children, a 7 and a 9-year-old. Let's welcome Dr. Hanos-Webb.
Thank you. Can everybody hear me? Good. Okay. Well, I thought that I would start off my talk today with some of my own brain scans. I know that we've been looking at brain scans in a lot of the other talks during this conference, so this is one of mine. As you can guess, it's with PowerPoint or Photoshop. So it's not a real brain scan, but I think it kind of paints a picture of some of the points that I'm going to be talking about today, which is going to be the imaginative gifts of ADHD. As you mentioned, I've written several books that have some combination of the gift of ADHD in the title, and I was asked today to talk very specifically about imagination. And I'll also be talking about what is the relationship between imagination and creativity. And so we'll spend some time unpacking that. And one of the other, the subtitle was How Fantasy Creates Reality. And so that was meant to be a little bit provocative in the sense that the idea we have is that if there's a kid in a classroom and he's spaced out, we could call him Space Cadet, then there's fantasies going on in his head, but that is by and large a waste of time. And I really want to challenge that today, and I'll challenge it with stories, I'll challenge it with research, and I will also come back around the end and say, you know, we know that there are some kids where their fantasies are basically, and adults, I'm sure there's been some adults that have had escapist fantasies in their life, but I will also make the case that those aren't a waste of time either. That even the most obviously escapist fantasy of sitting on a tropical island, of talking in an intergalactic bar, that those have a function, a meaning, and a purpose, and are also not a waste of time. So we'll come back to that. So I'll move past my brain scan here. And this is a quote that most people have seen on Facebook. Most people have seen this somewhere. Einstein. Everybody is a genius, but if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it will live its whole life believing it's stupid. Now, this isn't just a cute thing on Facebook to share with other people, to me, because this is really, when I work with adults and kids also, how I feel like I spend most of my time. If we apply that, what happens if you take a fish and you invite it to climb a tree for 12 years of its life? What are the consequences of that? And so I just want to take a moment to tell you a little bit about my perspective on this, which is that I'm a clinical psychologist. And so I see people that come to me that will have the diagnosis of ADHD. And I have had the sense that there's this huge disjunct between what happens in the education system and the fact that we don't really follow up on what happens to those kids. And, you know, I could also be talking about dyslexia. I could also be talking about auditory processing disorder. I could be talking about depression or anxiety. Kids that have a brain difference. And I think of it almost, if you could imagine that you went bowling, and every time you threw the ball, there was a curtain, and you had no idea if you were getting a strike or a gutter ball or what was happening. So I think that some of what I'm going to say to you today is as if I'm taking that curtain away and I'm showing you what happens downstream to those fish. Because I'm going to tell you, I'm going to show you what I see every week. This is just another way of saying the same thing. We see a monkey, a penguin, an elephant, a fish, a wolf, and a seal. And says, okay, everybody, we're going to all take the same exam. Please climb that tree. Okay. So what do you find? Let's lift up the curtain, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about my observations. It's probably a little bit obnoxious that I put fish is equal to ADHD student and studying is equal to climbing tree. You probably all could have figured that out, but felt like I had to just make it clear. So what happens downstream? What I see are adults who are amazingly gifted, and I can tell you some stories about some of them. I have a client who, he writes like Dan Brown, and came so scarred from the education system, just even in Ken Robinson's video, if you were here for that, about what would it have been like to teach Shakespeare at age 7. In today's education system, he may have ended up getting incredibly bored and totally checked out. So this is what I see downstream. I see not only do they have the original brain difference, let's call it ADHD, but in addition, they have depression, anxiety, and addictions. And in specific to ADHD, and maybe it's some quality about my practice, but when I'm talking about addictions, one thing that is very, very common, and again, maybe a little bit obnoxiously, call it the trifecta, because it's really not about winning a bunch of horse races. It's actually about having three different serious interactions that the interaction of which is disabling in itself. What is that trifecta that I see? Pot, porn, and video games. And so, you know, here, being close to Oaksterdam, it may be that pot is a little bit more of a local common addiction, but it's also a common form of self-medication for most people with, well, with for people with ADHD. And why I say that it's a particularly bad combination, as you can imagine, a 25-year-old who spends most of his time on his iPhone watching porn or watching video games and stoned out of his mind. And so now imagine what it looks like when that 25-year-old goes to apply for a job. Usually disabled self-esteem and not a lot of real-world experience. And certainly not the kind of experience that they're capable of. So studying, again, pointing a picture that isn't that convenient that dying is in the word. And I think what I mean by that is that for these children who are bright and creative, and I'm going to spend some time talking about what I think the gifts of ADHD are, but for those children to be where they are evaluated and valued for their capacity to study leads to what I'm calling the downstream problem of depression, anxiety, and addictions. And so as we start to look at this, one of the other points that I want to make, and this is the point I make in all of my books, is that ADHD and the symptoms of it are the side effects of a deep imagination. And in a moment, I'm actually going to map on all of the descriptions of the words incubation, which is one of the stages of creativity, and inspiration directly to the symptoms in the DSM of ADHD. And you'll see there's a substantial overlap. And it's interesting because I think in the real world, again, this is what I'm talking about with where you're bowling and there's a curtain and you don't know what's really going on, is in the real world, the ability to create something new is valued highly. And that's really what imagination does. Nobody thinks that the point of studying is to create something new. It's to get a good grade on a test. It's to learn the material. It's to achieve a level of mastery. So ADHD gives students a lot of fantasies. And so kind of the poster child of ADHD would be someone who's kind of staring off into space. Now, this is what I say to teachers all the time. Have you ever thought, and parents, about saying, what are you thinking about? What's going on in your head? And I find I usually get really interesting answers. And another part of that is that they are engaging material in a completely different way and often are not completely checked out. Going back to the Shakespeare example, you could imagine him in a math class, I don't know what kind of classes they had, and writing these incredible works of literature in his brain, and the teacher's thinking, well, he just isn't paying attention. So anyways, and these are part of what's causing the distraction. So does it really make sense to say that a person isn't paying attention? And it's interesting because I've been saying this for many years, and at this conference, in a lot of the research and the real brain scans, but not like mine, the real brain scans that people were showing, they found out that when people were what used to be called a resting state, that was the part that was consuming the most glucose. The brain was the most active. And it really supports what I have always said. Is it really possible to not be paying attention? They're just not paying attention, and this is the key phrase, to what they're supposed to be paying attention to. And that's the whole place between the education system and the downstream fish that's trying to climb a tree is what they're supposed to be paying attention to. Okay. So again, I will map very specifically the stages of creativity onto the symptoms of ADHD. So the stages of creativity are preparation, incubation, inspiration, verification, and creating products. So let's move forward. And I'm going to argue that ADHD are children who are very good at incubation and very good at inspiration. They're spacey and easily distracted by irrelevant thoughts. So this is, again, one of those places where one phrase tells us so much. So much about the disorder versus the gift. This is in the DSM, easily distracted by irrelevant thoughts. So what is an irrelevant thought? If Shakespeare is sitting in a class and he's not learning how to write his letters because he's so far behind that, is that an irrelevant thought? And so the entire basis of one of the main symptoms depends on what's irrelevant and what's relevant. And who makes that decision? Obviously the teacher. Obviously the curriculum standards. So again, and I have heard that one of the main points of this conference is to try to make kids' own passions be a relevant part of the curriculum. So that's important. Fail to give close attention to details. So I want to invite you to think, I'm assuming people went to most of the talks. I think it was Professor Yang's research where she talked about in order to make meaning out of information, to make meaning out of it, that's really, to most people and in the real world, would be very important, that you actually have an internal focus. You're not focused on the real world and that you actually move away from executive functioning. Not giving close attention to details. Again, an internal focus. It could be the process of making meaning out of information. Didn't listen when spoken to directly. So what I'm also saying here is that this process of incubation, as it's described in theory and as it looks like in brain scans, is really consistent with all of the symptoms of ADHD. So imagine this idea of incubation. You've got ideas going on in your head. How can I do this? How can we solve these problems? What are we going to do about it? Avoided sustained mental effort. So that can look like in the real world, in the external world, they're not putting forth that effort. But inside, when it looks like nothing's going on, what Dr. Andreessen called, what she called the dark matter, that the brain is, it's very active, but it's in a state of rest. She said you could be lying in a bed, and that would be when your brain was most active. Forgetful in daily activities. So, again, this idea of being preoccupied, and again, forgetful, which means forgetting the relevant, the important things in life. So, again, you can imagine that that's a matter of, that people would have disagreements about what was relevant. And inspiration. So this is the third stage of creativity. And I'm going to argue that it maps right on to the impulsive symptoms of ADHD. So fidgets. So again, I have this picture in my brain of, from Dr. Andreessen's talk of the Archimedes. And he has his eureka moment, and I don't know if someone can correct me, but he runs through the street. Is he naked? Is he what? You know, is he naked? Okay, he forgets things. He forgets things. He's impulsive because he's inspired. Okay, so if you think about Archimedes running through the streets saying, "Eureka," let's look at the rest of these symptoms. He can't sit still. Of course he can't. He's made a big discovery. Felt restless. Because things are happening. He's having some exciting ideas. He's thinking of different things. And then, as if driven by a motor, I love this because this is in the DSM, but it sounds like poetry, as if. It's a metaphor. We have a metaphor in the DSM, our medical journal, the Bible of the field. And it's true. It's true. And if a person is driven by a motor, it's kind of like if it really feels like that to the kid, you know, we might want to rethink our punishment of it. Talks excessively. Blurts out answers. Well, why would you blurt out things unless you thought you had a great idea? And I work with this so much between parents and kids. And I have these tools, and the tools are I teach my kids to say, know when to back off. Or the parents say, know when to back off. And the kid says, I know when to back off. So they're learning how to back off. But why are they doing it in the first place? Because they think they've got great ideas. And as we go forward, I'm going to be making the case that I think it's in our best interest for our kids to think that their ideas are good. I do. I think that's a good thing. They can't wait their turn. And they're always interrupting others. That sounds like a person who's inspired. It sounds like someone who's on fire. And I often see it that way, even in my office. And the parents are very frustrated. But I think it may be something that needs to be managed. They need to learn some tools for dealing with their inspiration. But I think if we call it what it is and can look to the positive side of it, that it's in the best interest of that child. And the reason is because, again, let's take off the curtain where you're bowling and seeing what kind of results you're getting downstream. These kids are showing up depressed and anxious. And if every idea they have is a bad idea, and if every thought they have is an inappropriate thought, an irrelevant thought, would that make you anxious? Would that make you doubt yourself? And really, that's the fundamental basis of anxiety and depression. And we'll talk some more about that. So for the rest of the talk, I really want to just talk about three main points. And I'm just going to kind of circle around them. And the first one is that fantasy can create reality. And again, so in the classroom, and for parents, you know, they're lost in space. What are they doing? They're always talking about this other stuff. I remember... You know, the other day, my daughter wanted to have a very lengthy conversation about, is there more blue in the world or is there more green in the world? This was really, really important to her. And we have conversations like this all the time. And so there's this ongoing fantasy life in kids, and what is the importance of it? But we'll talk about some more specific examples of in the real world. It's called self-efficacy if you believe that you can have an idea in your head and then translate that idea into the real world, we have a name for that. It's called self-efficacy. And without it, you're depressed and you're anxious. So that's something we're going to keep coming back to. The other idea is that ADHD kids are distracted and driven by this imagination, by these fantasies. So, and also that the way that we educate creative minds is that we value this process, that we help the kid identify what it is and show that there's some value to it. And then I want to kind of circle around this idea as we go along, which is studying leads to good grades. And that's a good thing. I think we all agree with that. The problem is, you know, I'm talking about kids with ADHD. I'm talking about kids who have a brain difference that doesn't actually lend itself very well to studying, that they learn in different ways. And then thinking, and I'm not talking like a cognitive scientist, I'm just kind of saying thinking, that process by where we try to solve a problem and we use the things that we already know and we apply them to the real world. Thinking leads to problem solution. Again, highly valued in the real world. And imagination leads to world changers, and I'll come back with some interesting examples. Everybody knows about Edison, everybody knows about Einstein, but I don't know if you know that Google was in part based on a dream. And so we'll come back to that. Monster.com, based on a dream. We'll come back to that. Some more modern examples. So this is a quote from Carl Jung. Without this playing with fantasy, no creative work has ever yet come to birth. The debt we owe to the play of imagination is incalculable. So again, just trying to open our minds about the value of this. And then in terms of this idea of does fantasy lead to reality and the difference between thinking, studying, and imagination. Does anyone know the work of Anne-Marie Roper or know of the Roper School? Nobody. Okay. Anne-Marie Roper lived in the Bay Area until she died last year at the age of 93. But she had, at the age of 18, escaped from Nazi Germany. And she came to the United States, and she had this idea. And it was her belief that what happened in Nazi Germany, the Holocaust, could not have happened if the German people could think for themselves. She thought that they had the schooling, the education was completely about obedience. And she really believed that she wanted to create a school that the number one outcome was children who could think for themselves. And I went to that school for only 1 year. And you see these bubbles here. Those were classrooms. And this is in the Detroit, Michigan area. I don't know if there's anyone here from there. Anyone from Detroit, Michigan? No. So these are there. And, you know, and I just have some memories of being in the class. And what happened was you created a contract with your teacher. And you said, this is what I'm going to do. And they would have to sign off on it, so you couldn't just goof around the whole time. And you would just kind of follow through, and you would do what you were supposed to do, but there was also modern dance. There was photography. There was lots of other types of activities so that the child was interested and engaged. So there's two points to this story. One is you can have a school where the point of it is for people to think for themselves, and you think that that's the best outcome. Personally, as a parent, I think that's the best outcome. I think the other best outcome is for kids to leave elementary school loving school. I think it's a big mistake when, you know, parents pressure, and kids leave elementary school. It's like they have a whole marathon ahead of them. So the love of school and thinking for themselves, I think, can be outcomes that we think are important. And I know the rest of the world, this is a private school, you know, the rest of the world, that's not going to work. But it could be a goal. It could be a fantasy that we have in our head. That wouldn't that be wonderful if that was what we valued in our kids? And so again, here's Einstein. So he's making the case not only, you know, do fantasies lead to reality, but in his case, he discovered the theory of relativity through imagining riding on a wave of light or beam of light.
So I just want to come back a little bit to this idea of definition. What is imagination? Owen Barfield says the individual mind exercising its sovereignty.
So what does that mean? It's the difference between passively taking in the world and imagination says the world could be different. It's you're being sovereign over what's already out there. And so here the idea is it's something superior to studying, for example. And maybe it is. So there is this idea. I also think of it as film-like visual images. And then, you know, again, in my practice, there seems to be an association between ADHD and dyslexia and people that kind of think in pictures. And so this kind of goes hand in hand with an active fantasy life and imagination.
Jerome Singer at Yale says, daydreaming is a critical way in which humans move beyond their immediate environment, and I love this, vicarious virtual realities. What if we thought of imagination as vicarious virtual realities that allow them to try out alternative personalities and interests?
Again, I'm going to transition a little bit back to my role as a psychologist, psychotherapist, because as a psychotherapist, it's really obvious that, and the quote here says, live out your imagination, not your history, that what makes people change is to have an imagination of something that's different from what it already is. And for so many people, that's hard to do. And I wonder if it's because we don't value it in school, and so people don't have an experience of saying, oh, I have an imagination, now I turn it into reality. I have another imagination, now I'll turn it into another reality. And I remember when I was in graduate school in Oxford, Ohio, which was Miami University, which is kind of like a campus, but mostly just a cow field. And I had applied for a job at University of California, San Francisco, for a postdoc. And I remember coming to the interview, and I remember after I got accepted, there was a really big barrier to me saying yes. And it was, well, San Francisco is a global tourist destination. I'm coming from a cow field. People don't really live like that, do they? And it almost seemed too good to be true. I didn't have an imagination that you could live in a global tourist destination. I grew up in the Detroit area. I went to school in the Ohio cow field area. And the idea that I would live in San Francisco just was off my radar. But I had to create a fantasy about what that would look like. And I did. So again, in therapy, this idea that fantasies is the basis of change is pretty straightforward. And then if we're kind of a specialist, let's say, in hypnosis or guided imagery, the whole idea is you create a new fantasy and then reality follows. So it could be as simple as, I'm not a smoker. It could be as simple as, I'm running a marathon. And you kind of go through the guided imagery and you believe those fantasies and images, and then people's realities really do change. So again, ADHD and imagination. I wrote about it in my book, The Gift of ADHD. And sometimes when I've talked at schools, teachers have said, well, it's wonderful that ADHD may be associated with ADHD, that imagination is associated with ADHD, but imagination is a problem in the classroom. And so that doesn't really help me out. And it's funny because when I was teaching as a graduate student, I taught undergraduate classes, and at Santa Clara University, I taught graduate students. And I noticed something really interesting in my office hours. And it comes back to this idea of studying versus thinking versus imagining. The straight A students were really, really good and interested in studying. So when they would come to my office hours, what a time felt like was, what's on the text on Thursday? Page 22 says X, and page 34 says Y. What's the right answer? And so it wasn't really about engaging the material. It wasn't. It was about studying and getting the good grades. the ADHD students, and this is really the moment where this idea came to me, were so much more interesting to talk to. The ADHD students